D-Mace, Vin, Ginn, and Donick, 102.5. The Game. The Game Nashville Sports Network is your home for the college football playoff tonight at 6:30 on 102.5. The Game. It's number 5 Oregon taking on number 1 Indiana in the Peach Bowl. The college football playoff is presented by Twin Peaks and Parman Tractor and Equipment. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
No comment on the musical theme?
I like the music.
I mean, it's Friday.
It is Friday.
I like it.
It may be before my time.
Yeah. It was definitely before your time. Yeah, okay. But that hasn't stopped you before. You could go back in the annals.
I can. That is true.
Just not for that one.
Just not for that one.
You don't know about Yarbrough and Peoples?
No. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he don't.
Let's get to chat.
He like, huh?
Yar
it's
who?
Like,
who's people?
People? What?
Let's welcome in Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. So, Chad, Ole Miss's elimination last night means the SEC has been shut out of the national championship game for the third year in a row. This hasn't happened since the turn of the millennium. So how should the SEC feel about that?
First off, Willie, the only Yarbrough I know is former Tennessee Vol Hooper, Vincent Yarbrough.
Vincent Yarbrough, yeah, I can see that.
You just taught me something, too. I like that I walked into a house party also. That was great.
Yes. I don't think there's any relation.
No, I don't think so either. Look, I think that the SEC, it's not a good look. You know, it's 3 straight years, no national championship appearance. I would still contend top to bottom, you know, the SEC is better than the other conferences from this respect. If you told me I had to go to Kentucky or Arkansas or Auburn versus going to Maryland and Purdue and some of these other programs, I would still prefer to go to the bottom of the Big Ten and play a game. But the difference is, guys, that the top conferences are not just as good, in some cases better, than the SEC. So there's not that elite team anymore that's just far and away more dominant with talent than others. We know Ohio State's roster and how good it's been and how many NFL draft picks they've produced. They're as good, if not better, than any roster in college football. Michigan has gotten that way as well. Now you see what Indiana is doing with a roster that has talent, but not that elite high school recruiting talent that we're used to. They're doing it a bit of a different way in the transfer portal. But I really think the Big Ten's a good example of that. It's just changed. I think everything in college football, the dynamic has shifted so much. NIL has certainly helped other conferences as well. I think it's helped a number of SEC programs too. But I think you just look across the country and there's better football being played in different conferences. And by the way, I think that's a great thing for the sport. I think people hating on the SEC is a good thing for the sport. Sometimes a little dislike or hate is not a bad thing in sports. And I think that people are taking victory laps around the SEC, honestly, is a good thing nationally. And it's time for the SEC to step it back up and produce one of those dominant teams that can make a national championship game.
To that point, Chad, what must the SEC do to adjust to reassert its dominance?
I just think a team needs to emerge that is dominant. You know, it's been one thing or the other. You know, Ole Miss loses their coach going into the playoff, and they still play well, but that's not the dominant team. Georgia, I thought, was the dominant team coming in, and they got involved in a great second half and trying to beat a team twice and lost in the second half. Alabama, let's face it, it's not the Nick Saban Alabama. It's not an Alabama fan's birthright to be as good as they were under Nick Saban. It's just not the same program. They're not feared anymore. It's very different with that program. So is somebody else going to emerge as the dominant power? I would still lean towards it being Georgia or Texas or one of the more predictable programs that's going to be that. But it just takes one of them becoming a little bit better and getting hot at the right time and not running into a bad matchup and all of that. You know, a year ago, both Georgia and Texas had a shot. I think Georgia had a pretty good shot, but they go up against Notre Dame with Gunnar Stockton, who had never started at quarterback after Carson Beck got injured in the SEC championship game. So, you know, that's not a great opportunity for an SEC team to advance. I don't really know that there's one magic answer other than one of these teams at the top of the conference just has to get a little bit better to get over the top again.
Now, Chad, we say that, but in today's football, What do we classify as dominant? Is it the old way we did when Alabama was winning, you know, championship after championship every 2 or 3 years? Or is it just a team winning a championship but then being in the playoffs? Because what you said is true. Because of these head coaches are leaving, and this has happened, but this is the world of college football now. I don't know if there will be a dominant team anymore. Basketball went through its phase where it was dominant teams, but then all of a sudden the landscape changed. And now you had dominant teams as far as from a historical standpoint, and we always like to watch Duke and these other teams, but when you're talking about winning championships, now it becomes a little bit more diverse in who wins it.
I totally agree, D. Mason. And the fact that we aren't going into every college football season just saying, oh, it's either Alabama or Ohio State or Clemson or Georgia or name another program, right? Most years in the last 10 or 15 years, we could point to 5 to 7 teams. LSU would be in that mix occasionally. Auburn might be in that mix. But we'd throw those teams in and say, it's going to be one of these 6 or 7 teams. I think that that pool of possible teams to win it all has expanded. And I think that's a great thing for the sport also. And what would I define as dominant? It's not multiple national championships in a short time. It's a team that can get to the quarterfinals year in and year out. You know, I consider Ohio State to be a pretty dominant football program, right? They won it all last year. They got knocked out after getting a bye in the quarterfinals this year. Still pretty good. You know, they lost their last two games, but I would put that level of, you know, Georgia also is another one I'd put in there. If you consistently feel like, well, the floor is the quarterfinals of the playoffs, then you are a dominant program, even if you aren't just routinely winning national championships the way Nick Saban was at Alabama. And in terms of this season, what is dominant? It's Indiana. I mean, I can't point to anyone else, but I point to them at undefeated and, you know, challenged in that game in Eugene against Oregon, but won by multiple scores, and then challenged at Penn State but found a way in on a day where they didn't play very well. That's dominant. In today's college football, this Indiana team is the most dominant. But, guys, they're going into a game tonight where I think a lot of people, the trendy pick is Oregon because it's going to be so tough for Indiana to beat them twice. But I'm not betting against Kurt Cignetti.
Now, what did you see from the Hurricanes that would make you believe, and I don't know if you think they can win a national championship or not, but that would make you believe they could win a national championship?
A dominant front seven, that's the envy of everybody in college football. I mean, I think I watched that, and they would be great for any team to have that level of aggression and those guys up front. And in that second half, I mean, I thought their offensive line was fantastic. I think the way they pull their guards, the way they get things in motion. I mean, I saw a 17-yard run where he was untouched until 15 yards down the field. And I'm thinking that's just expert offensive line play from Miami. So I do think in the trenches, they're outstanding. And that's what I saw last night. You know, the way we thought about the old SEC was those Alabama fronts, Georgia fronts that now all play for the Philadelphia Eagles, their offensive lines. I watch Miami, and I think that's in the trenches, that's who they are. They're Alabama. They're Georgia in years past. They're LSU. That's how talented the front and the offensive line for Miami is. So that's what I saw in that game, and that's what I've seen from them consistently. They had held the ball for over 41 minutes last night in time of possession. They physically dominated Ole Miss, and Ole Miss hung in there and played pretty well late and got the turnovers and took advantage of penalties and all of that. But I really think watching it, Miami was the much better team in that game.
Chad Withrow is with us. And Chad, what did you think on a related topic here, the decision for Chambliss, because I think we all got to really like watching him play, but it's that same dilemma, right? You can't stay in college forever. Not everybody could be Thornton Mellon.
Yeah. What was it? Tommy Boy said, you know, hey, a lot of people go to school for 7 years. Right. Yeah, they're called doctors, yeah. I think David Spade said. That must be you, right? No, I'm just always surprised. Look, when the NCAA at this point just decides to say no to anything because we've become so accustomed to them just kind of throwing their hands up and, you know, releasing a statement saying, hey, guys, we think this is ridiculous, too, to bring back, you know, former NBA first-round draft picks to play. But, you know, we really can't do anything until Congress does something and gives us an antitrust exemption is what they want, because they know that if it goes to federal court, they're likely to lose. So when it comes to eligibility stuff like this, they still do have some teeth, and obviously they can rule, and they did on Trinidad Chambliss. But, I mean, I don't know where this goes. I saw Tom Mars release a statement. I mean, I know they're going to continue to do things legally. They're talking about we're going to get a fair hearing in Mississippi judiciary, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's going to be real fair for the NCAA when you go in front of Mississippi judiciary about whether or not the star Ole Miss quarterback can continue to play for one more year. So I think it's all a mess. I thought the Diego Pavia thing was a mess, quite frankly. Worked out great for Vandy, but I don't think that's good overall for the sport. I think Joey Aguilar getting another year of eligibility, while great for Tennessee, is bad for the sport overall. But what do I think right now is going to happen? I think he'll probably get an extra year. I think Chambliss will. I think that Joey Aguilar, if motivated to continue down that path, is going to get one as well. It's just, it's crazy to see all this, Willie. I'm with you, but we've entered an era right now where if you push the envelope and you continue to pay lawyers, you can probably get what you want out of this.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. So, Chad, where do you think Ole Miss goes from here after the whole fallout, right? It was a great run. They almost got to the final, which would have been just a great story with everything, and it still was a good story. But now they've got to figure out where they're going.
I love what Pete Golding said about all these other programs. They sell tradition, and they show people their Heisman Trophy winners and their national championships. And he said something, you know, like, well, not a damn person in those rooms did that. They didn't win the Heisman Trophy. They didn't win the national title. We sell trajectory at Ole Miss. You know, and that sounds great, right? He said, we're selling that this is a player-led, you got the infrastructure, they've got resources behind it, and we're all about where are we going, not where have we been, which is what you have to do if you're a program with not a ton of winning success like an Ole Miss. So I think they got the right guy for the job. I think this playoff run shows that with Pete Golding. I got a couple of friends who are really tied into Ole Miss, Willie, and I talked to them about it. They're very optimistic. Even before the wins in the playoff, they said, look, Ole Miss has money. They've got support. Walker Jones is a stud athletic director. They've got what it takes to put money into it and make it work. Sorry, Keith Carter, athletic director. Walker Jones heads up their collective, which you can see how I'm confused because they're kind of one and the same now. Walker
both
Jones,
both very important jobs.
Yes, both very important. Walker Jones, the Grove Collective, he's got his money in order. They've got their system in order. Keith Carter, great athletic director, and they love Pete Golding. You know, this to me is the great test study of, can you go with an unproven coach, maybe pay the head coach a bit less, and allocate more for staff, more for analysts, and more for roster, and go win at the highest level? Because, quite frankly, I think it's insane to pay anyone that's not Kurt Cignetti or Kirby Smart $13 million a year right now to be the head coach. Because I would want more of that money going towards roster if I'm one of these programs. So I think it's we know what Ole Miss was this year, and that was a program and a roster built by Lane Kiffin. I'm really interested to see what they look like moving forward. If they can continue some of this success, I think it's a good template for other programs to follow.
It is an interesting theory about the allocation of resources. It was almost like a money ball, like everybody's rethinking. And, of course, Moneyball, one of the things they did was they thought that the manager of the team was less important than some other than traditionally was the case. So I wonder if that will play out in time. Chad, real quick, a question on hoops. Vanderbilt and Tennessee will play each other twice late in the season. They don't see each other for a while, but in the meantime, they're both going to try to rack up some wins here. Tell me what you're seeing with Tennessee right now.
Yeah, I think with Tennessee, it's a team that still is looking to get completely connected. You know, I think you kind of take for granted with Ziegler and Meshack and all those guys around for so long, just how together that group was the last couple of years that made that run to the Elite Eight, led by those two guys. This is almost a completely new team, you know, other than some returning guys in the front court. So I think it's taking some time to get together. I think they're starting to do that. They got to go play well on the road. You know, they've yet to play a good game, a good road game so far. They've got the big win over Houston. They gave them their only loss on a neutral court. But they need to go play well in a true road game. We know how good they've been under Rick Barnes at home. I don't see that stopping anytime soon. And really, they got to hit their free throws. Because, you know, in this league, when you get into these games,
there's going to be some high foul games if anything is true from Memorial Gym the other night.
imagine if Vandy, you know, shot 42% from the free throw line, shooting 80 free throws or whatever it was combined the other night. You know, they're not winning that game. So if Tennessee hits free throws on the road at Arkansas, they win. And they get the biggest win early on in the conference on the road. That's been a real bugaboo for this team. And with the margin so razor thin, when you play good competition in the league, especially on the road, you got to hit free throws. And this team just has not done that. They were a little better on Tuesday night against Texas in Knoxville, but they got to go on the road and play well at some point and notch a big road win. And that's what I'm looking to see from the Vols this season.
Chad Withrow has been our guest on D-Maze, Vingan and Donick. He joins us every Friday. And, of course, you can hear him with our friend Jonathan Hutton on Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. Chad, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
Always fun, gents. Have a great weekend.
You as well. 615-737-1025. All right, we've talked about it a little bit already, but we're going to do more of a deep dive into this subject. Has the SEC reached a crossroads of sorts now that it has been shut out of the national title game in college football for the third year in a row? We will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.